You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
I just really like the part that goes ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Tequila!
Yeah!
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, so was I, but it was, that's my favorite part of the song.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's hot outside.
Yeah, summertime is here. We have the pop-up thunderstorms today. All of the things associated with summer flying. Sounds weird, but I'm glad it's here. Finally, I've been waiting
man.
For it.
It doesn't sound weird at all.
To want all these thunderstorms
yeah,
and the heat and the humidity.
Like fun.
And, yeah, well, they're popping up all over today, and I got to go flying, so it was all good.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, hey, it's the days are getting longer here. Every time we start the show, especially here in May, I think it's the first month that we've had daylight still remaining in our signature FBO studio here.
No, I think we talked about this last time.
Well, I know, but still, I think I like it a lot.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, well, we get to see both. So now it's kind of dusk. The lights of the taxiway, the blue lights are starting to glow, but yet you can see everything because the sun's still somewhere out in the west kind of lighting up the environment.
Yeah, right.
In-between stage, as it were.
In-between stage. Yeah, well, it's 8 p.m. in the Central Time Zone, Chicago, Illinois. You have Mark Eppner and Al Water with you broadcasting live from the PWK Airport. That only means one thing.
Simple Flight Radio.
Yeah, exactly.
And thanks to our friends at Signature Flight Support, we have this beautiful glass studio with a look upon the ramp at PWK, Papa Whiskey Kilo, which, as we've often said, even though it's called Chicago Executive, I can't get any controlling facility anywhere in the country to call it anything other than Palwaukee. It stays with us.
Yeah, well, I love it. I love it. I hope it never changes.
Well, as long as we keep it alive the way it is, you know, it won't ever change, despite the best efforts of airport management.
Right.
Who are good people. It's kind of like when this, can I say this? Yeah, when Macy's moved to Chicago and they thought, well, people don't care about the Marshall Field's name. And they changed everything to Macy's, and they took a hit.
Right.
Because Chicago is all about Marshall Field. So.
Yeah. But you know what also is like? It's like when baseball stadiums are renamed and such like that. You know, so it's like Comiskey Park, now U.S. Cellular. Who calls it U.S. Cellular?
Well, and before that was White Sox Park.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was Comiskey, then White Sox Park. And, yeah, so, you know, these naming rights, I think we were even getting used to it. My high school, they sold naming rights to their football field. They were in the paper, this is a few years ago, 2001, I think, or something, Rust-Oleum Field.
Right.
I'm serious.
That sounds weird.
Yeah. Hey, let's go out and watch
the Vernon Hills Cougars. Let's go to the Rusty Bucket.
Yeah, right. Go out for the game and have a Rusty Nails drink or something like that.
Well, hey, you know what? I don't think I need any Rusty Nails to get laughing at any of your jokes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So we have a... Anyway, yeah, so it's a,
yeah.
Let's go with, go ahead. Do you have a nice little, a joke for us loaded up?
I can try. I can try. You know, the, if this were video, you could see what just happened, but let's go on. So I was talking, to a priest, right? You know, he does the confessions and all of that. And, so I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but, and he was talking about an interesting experience with aviation and I guess an older pilot, you know, pilots have the reputation, at least in the old days, about maybe being somewhat promiscuous.
Yeah.
Right. So, this, older pilot goes in and says, Father O'Malley, my name is, I'll say Sky King to protect the innocent. And, I'm 78 years old. Believe it or not, I'm currently involved with a 28-year-old girl and also on the side, her 19-year-old sister. We engage in all manners of pleasure, and in my entire life, I've never felt better. So the priest says, my good man, I think you've come to the wrong place. Why in the world are you telling me this? And the guy said, I'm telling everybody.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's awesome.
And who wouldn't?
I don't know what's funnier. It's either the soundboard that you have on your iPad or the joke. I don't know.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's the joke, but we'll go with whatever.
Yeah. I love it. Love it. Well, you did it again. You hit it out of the park once and again.
Going.
Swung on, belted. There he goes. Yeah, I like
nice,
that.
That's a nice applause. One.
Yeah.
That's like a
State of the Union applause.
Yes, very polite and considerate whether they agree or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, hey, what did you do, with aviation this week?
Well, as I mentioned, yesterday we had a flyout, which is pretty cool. Went over to DBQ, Delta Bravo Quebec, Dubuque, Iowa, and tried out a restaurant within the terminal building.
Uh-huh.
And it was okay, but it was a new one to put in the logbook. We had about 20 people show up, so that was cool. But visibility this weekend is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And my goal was to get to Cedar Rapids, Charlie India Delta today to see my son, my daughter-in-law, and my granddaughter. And, got up. I heard there was going to be some severe storms there early and then a little gap and then kind of early afternoon they'd come in again. And I thought, my wife doesn't like flying in that. I'm going to probably drive. So we got up at 6 a.m. to drive the 4 hours. And then I called the briefer and it, you know what? There was a gap there. I felt like we could make it. I knew we could divert south. So we took off about 9 and by 10, actually it was about 8:45 and by 10 o'clock, we were in Cedar Rapids. It was scuzzy as could be, but we went around a big old cell with a lot of little lightning bolts.
Nice.
Yeah.
So did you that's pick what that I say. I felt XM like. On the XM radar or on the XM?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. And so we could see it, even though it was a few minutes old since it was not isolated, but scattered. I could see where it was, and it was interesting. I actually, my wife, who's not a happy IFR flyer, I think she finally took some interest in understanding what the MFD was showing, where the lightning was and why we were safe. And then the afternoon, there was all kinds of pop-ups, but they were few and far between. There was a big one over the Mississippi River.
Wow.
So we just, again, stayed a little bit south when stayed safe. Bumpy, hazy, but I got to see my family. And to me, that's one of the best reasons to fly besides just the sheer joy of it.
Right. No, that's awesome. I love how you do something really well, and that's use it for life. Use an airplane for life, let me put it that way.
Well, it's the only way that – I shouldn't say that. I was trying to make this a joke, but we just laugh because I've used the airplane to go help my son put together something like a barbecue grill when he first got out of college and he wasn't used to building stuff. And now I go fly out and take them to lunch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, 4-hour drive or an hour plane ride. You tell me which is the better way to use this.
Oh, time. I would go for the drive any day.
Yeah, right.
Liar. Liars. Yeah. All lies. Well, I kind of had a cool week in aviation. It was pretty chill.
Nothing chill. And I'm thinking chilly, which is last week. We still have to do our show on your chilly flight.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so that's worth a whole show, but yeah, this last week was pretty chill. I came back from Chile last weekend, and I did just a few instructional flights.
Right.
Had a great time. Went up to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Manitowoc, Wisconsin, just north of Sheboygan. And for those of you who don't know where Sheboygan is, it's just north of Milwaukee. Anyway, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful night. I mean, it was one of those first warm, like, 80-degree nights.
Yeah,
and the ramp was open. They had jets out there. They had props. They had everybody out there. The OPA was hosting one of those chart challenge events. Have you seen?
Been there. I went to a local one actually.
Yeah, and it was cool. You know, they had the classic airport hamburger and brat type cookout. And
oh, I love that.
That is. There's something delicious about that. But it was cool. And then the next day, hopped in the King Air, flew down to Bentonville, Arkansas, and then up to Ithaca, New York.
Bentonville, Arkansas. I know who's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The Sam Walton Company.
Yes, you got it. Okay. It was neat to go down there and then up to Ithaca, New York, and back to here to Chicago. So it was nice. It was a fun trip. And have you ever been to Ithaca?
No, I have been. There was a funny movie. I can't remember the name of it, but it had to do with Ithaca, New York.
Really?
Yeah, it was a college thing. It was like, I can't remember the players. I can see all the faces. I know all the dialogue. Can't remember the real names or the title of the movie. But I have not been to Ithaca.
Hey, well, you got to go. They have, the airport is really cool. There's like kind of this cool approach. It sits on this like hill, and then the town, it like slopes down on the hill, and then you go into this like the lakes, the Finger Lakes in northern upstate
The Finger Lakes I'm familiar with.
Yeah, so it's cool, and it's very scenic approach and everything. And I guess they call Ithaca is their slogan is called Ithaca is gorgeous. But they mean like gorgeous gorges, as in the rock formations.
Oh.
And there's a lot of those around there, and it's cool. And it's, that's the lake down there makes me want to fly seaplanes.
I want to get that rating too. Actually, yeah. But I'm going to do the glider thing first, I think.
When did you decide that?
When we had that glider guy on about August in the show.
Yeah.
I at least want to take a few lessons. I'll see how much I take to it.
Absolutely.
You know, when we were in Dubuque, they had a lot of hills, Dubuque, Iowa, and they had it's some form of transportation, these little trolleys that take you up a hill.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Walking
to the airport.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It looks like a trailer home that's on a cable and dragged up this hill. And I asked them, well, what's on the other end? Is it like a resort? And she goes, no, it's a neighborhood. And I'm thinking, well, if you can't, like, do anything other than knock on strangers' doors, why would anyone go up the cable car?
Yeah.
But now I want to see it. Isn't that weird? Went in for a quick lunch. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, hey, I got in honor of your quick lunch in Dubuque, and I'm afraid I missed that. That sounds
QLID, by the way.
What's that?
Quick lunch in Dubuque.
Yeah. I still don't know how you do that because I've tried that secretly in my car. The drive home, or just like come up with a sentence and do it, and I can't do it. I fumble and I freak out.
Really?
It's horrible.
So, I mean, like, I have a skill?
You do have a skill.
Either that or maybe you just don't have it and everybody else has it.
Maybe. That's probably the case.
I would think so.
But anyway, I got a question for you, and I'm kind of curious to hear your answer. What do you think about the $100 hamburger? Do you think it is good or bad for aviation?
I think it's good. I hate to say it, but I think it's kind of one of those things that I don't know if I should use the word saves, but it gets people laughing. I mean, laughing, what is that? It gets people flying.
Yeah. I think it gets people, I'll give you that. It gets people flying, but I don't think it's necessarily, I don't think it's that great for aviation. And here's why, because I call it the $100 hamburger rut. Meaning that people go out and all they do is fly to go eat. Fly to go to their local airport or, you know, the small handful of restaurants really close to their, home airport. And then they go get a mediocre hamburger and come back.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I think, though, without it, there would be less flying, and less flying is bad for general aviation, and less flying is bad for currency and proficiency. Not that anyone gets that proficient flying 5 miles to the next airport.
Right.
But at least they're getting a takeoff and landing, and they're buying some fuel. They're supporting a business that is involved somewhat directly, maybe indirectly, but somehow involved with aviation. So it feels good, even though I will agree with you, it's somewhat limiting.
Right. No, I would say that it does feel good, and there's some good places to go to. But another thing is that pilots, I think they use that. That's like the default reason to go fly, you know. And people are looking for multiple, you know, reasons to go, and it's always that's like the last thing. Yeah, you know, they probably try to look for a lot of different things to do, but they end up not, they can't figure out what else to do, so they just default to the $100 hamburger. So how do we teach people? My question is, how do we teach people to look for new ways or reasons to fly rather than just for the $100 hamburger?
I think it all comes back to what are their interests. You know, it's some people like museums. And
right.
Maybe it's that. Some people like golf. Maybe it's going to a golfing, you know, hey, I haven't played this golf course 200 miles away,
right.
And I never would. I don't know if you know this about me, but I was thinking of starting a concierge service.
Really?
Yeah, for GA pilots. And it was all in the goal was to sell airplanes.
Yeah.
But as an offshoot, it's, okay, I was going to go to high school seniors' parents.
Yeah.
Okay, your kid is going off to college next year, and they're going to be, many of them would be in this area, Big Ten school.
Right.
And I'd say, hey, you know what? Let's teach you how to fly.
Yeah.
And now you can go visit them whether they want to see you or not, but now you can go visit them.
Yeah.
Take them to lunch.
Right.
Or go out for a tea time, or a husband and wife go out to dinner and a show in a town 150 miles away.
Right.
And I didn't do it, obviously, but so that is just an offshoot of the $100 hamburger, and all it's doing is just exchanging meal with event or destination.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a nice thing. So that you were connecting, you know, reasons of like, go see the kid, you know, go see the kid or go see the, go do a dinner and a show or something like that. But then, you know, I guess, you know, those are types of things that as you explore, I think, if you have a different reason to rather than just go eat, you know, then you can look for new reasons to go out and fly. So if you have a reason to go say, hey, I'm going to go see my college graduate down at, you know, whatever university town, you know, I think after that you might say, hey, well, maybe I'll, instead of go see them next time, I'll go fly down, pick them up, and then, you know, take them somewhere else. You know, rather than do something like that. I don't know. I think that train of thought or that pathway of thinking could be elevated somewhat.
Yeah. It's interesting because those of us that fly not for a living.
Right.
And don't use air travel to help us make a living, you have to find a reason. And I suspect those that don't understand it would think, oh, those are those rich guys.
Right.
And they don't need to fly. You know, it's, you know, there's more important things in life. And somehow we have to find a value exchange. You know, people have passions and
right.
Ours happens to be flying. And so you need something that besides the act of pulling on a yoke and throwing a throttle forward at, again, a destination, not just the journey. It's kind of backwards. We usually talk about, that people need to learn to love the journey. With pilots, we already love the journey. Now we got to figure out the destination.
Yeah, right. No, that's exactly right. You know, where's the cool place to go? And I think if you look everywhere, there's cool places to go all over the place. Not necessarily like, you know, I don't have a gripe about the $100 hamburger. I just have a gripe about the 100 that $100 hamburger rut. And that is where people just kind of go to the same airport, get comfortable. They're, you know, it doesn't even have to be airport, it could be plural, but the same, you know, handful of airports that everybody goes to feed themselves. And then they don't really, you know, that's all their aviation career is. Maybe right. They're completely happy, but, you know, the people that I know that I've talked to, they say that they like going to get a hamburger, but, you know, it's, you know, they're looking for something else. They're looking for that real pizzazz or that spark. And I don't know, I just find that that's a pretty interesting challenge to try to, you know, I guess it's a good problem trying to give people a reason to fly, you know, because there is a reason to fly, and that's just to have fun, you know, but, you know, what's the back end side of it?
Yeah, well, and again, it needs to have real meaning, because I think while we get in that rut, and I agree with you there, it is a rut, we need to find a new rut, if you will, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, otherwise it'll go away, and it's, I see too many people leave aviation because there isn't something more. They get, okay, I've done the hamburger 150 times. I'm going to spend my money on something else this
right.
weekend.
Yeah, exactly. So now, and then I think the $100 hamburger is now, in a lot of people's minds, it's got that negative connotation. Now they say, oh, it's no longer the $100 hamburger. It's the $300 hamburger, the $400 hamburger. And yeah, the prices go up. So, but, you know, when does a hamburger become too expensive? So how do you find, like what you said, that different value? If it's getting more expensive, how do you put a different, you know, end value on it?
Well, and we already talked about aviation being an addiction, an affliction, whatever you want to call it, passion. And we rationalize everything.
Right.
And I hate to be addict is obviously a very tragic thing when you talk in drugs, but you know, here I'm calling an addict for someone that loves aviation, and it's so great, but if there should be more meaning to it other than we love it, or maybe not. You know, as long as you feel, you as a pilot, expend that money and feel you get that much value in return, then it's cool, right?
Yeah.
Right? So, but it's helping people find more value, I think, is what you're talking about. And there's stuff out there, but we somehow, whether it's through our show or through other things, that people find that aviation opens up a new world to them beyond aviation.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's and that's a cool thing to explore and all that. So, I don't know. I think you're right. The $100 hamburger is good, but my question is, how long is it good for? And especially now that things are getting more expensive. And yeah, it's how do we develop a new pathway to learn how to fly? So,
yeah, exactly.
It's pretty cool, but you know what? There's our guest tonight.
We have a guest?
Yeah, it's of course. We can't be Simple Flight Aviation Radio without a guest.
I'm just kidding. You know that.
Yeah, but our guest tonight, she's on an awesome challenge of finding these, for lack of a better term, the $100 hamburger spots all across America and sharing them, not just with pilots and giving them reasons to go out and fly or find these places, but also giving, you know, the general public reason to come out to the airport and share good eats.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's airfare, airfare, F-A-R-E, airfareamerica.net, and the president is Andrea Verneau, and she's going to be talking to us now. She's actually president of her own company called the Armchair Aviatrix.
I love that name.
Yeah, so do I. LLC, Armchair Aviatrix LLC. And so we're going to be talking to her in just a minute about what she does. And actually, there's a casting call because this is something she's doing for an upcoming TV show, and they're looking for pilots, chefs, and gearheads, as she calls them.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting. Actually, I think I'd like to do it. Do I apply for the job during their show, I wonder?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
So do you consider yourself a foodie?
A foodie? I love to eat. And I just figured it was another affliction that just goes along with being a pilot.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think all pilots have an eating addiction. That's judging by the animal crackers that you always get.
I know. Well, and blueberry muffins on top of the French onion soup and the sweet, oh my God, sweet potato tater tots that I had tonight.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, a margarita sandwich, open face sandwich.
Yeah.
I ate too much.
I think so for those of you to let you in on a little secret ourselves, you know, at the Chicago Executive Airport, Palwaukee,
yay,
you know, they had a restaurant, but it closed down. But one of the cool places, you know, I think there's some really neat, restaurants, you know, within a 2 or 3 minute driving distance of the airport. So fly in here, grab a crew car, and go to, we always go to Players Pub beforehand.
Right. Or the Ram.
Or the Ram. Or,
Twin Peaks. Yeah. That's the one that just opened up, by the way. So
yeah.
We just had to try it.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. And then there's Bob Chin's. There's Bob Chin's, which is a pretty famous restaurant all over.
Yeah, it's where we have our Flying Club breakfast once a month.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think, you know, having an airport restaurant, in my opinion, doesn't necessarily mean to be exactly on the airport, although it's really nice.
You know, I want to ask Andrea about that.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that if you can, like say, 2 or 3 minutes or at least walk to it, doesn't that qualify?
Yeah.
We'll have to ask her what she thinks as the expert.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why not ask her right now?
We could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get Andrea Verneau on the line, the president of Airfare America. Follow them on Twitter at Airfare America or visit them on airfareamerica.net.
Yeah, that's very cool. Let's see.
All right.
One ringy dingy.
Two ding ding.
You obviously never saw the show.
No, I did not.
And I bet you that's Andrea joining us now. Andrea?
I am here.
Yay. All right. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Welcome.
I am well. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. We've been spending, I don't know if you listened to the first portion of the show, but we've been talking how much we love food.
And who doesn't, which is the brilliance of airfare.
Right, right. Well, this is also interesting because, you know, pilots, I've always said pilots love food, pilots love airplanes, and then you go ahead and start this Airfare America at airfareamerica.net, and that's explores America's love affair through our universal love of food, travel, and discovery. What, that's so enticing in and of itself.
Thank you. We're trying to make the $100 hamburger a $10 hamburger. So
yay.
We want to get people into the airports who don't know they exist, don't know about the diners and the fine, you know, white tablecloth eating that some of them have, the destinations that include museums and public art and parks, the great hidden hangar treasures. I mean, you get people's attention with food, and then you, once they're captured, you open up the doors and you really can introduce people into a great world that really, you know, is basically known by pilots and some of the locals, but outside of that, there's a lot of Americans that would enjoy what pilots have known for years, and that's the great dining and destinations at airports. So that's Airfare America. We're travel, we're history. We like to say we're food, fun, and flying.
Ah, the three important S of life. Actually, I'm not going anywhere else with that one.
Did you just come up with that one?
I did, actually,
wow.
But anyway. so, Andrea, you know, though, and this is going to be a great topic, but, you know, I've read up a little bit about you, and you were a chief marketing officer, you were a chief operating officer, so you've got C-level experience at some organizations, and now you're president of Armchair Aviatrix LLC. What kind of was the spark or the catalyst to make that significant change in your life?
Yeah, why did I give up my day job?
Exactly.
It was an aha moment. You get to that stage in age, and I'm not ashamed to say, in fact, I'm going to proudly say I turned 50 a few weeks ago.
Happy birthday.
And thank you so much.
Congrats.
And there is a certain freedom with that. And when great ideas occur to you, or what you hope is a great idea, you run with it, or you try and live in that moment. And I had an aha moment. I have been promoting and marketing the state of Maryland as a place to do business, as a great travel destination, just as a great place to live, work, and play for close to 25 years. and had the benefit of knowing about some of these little hidden airports. Maryland has 36, which is not a large number as compared to a California, a Texas, a Georgia, a Florida. But, you know, a significant number. But most people in Maryland know one airport, and that is BWI, or Baltimore Washington International.
Right.
So I was kayaking one day, and I was in a beautiful, beautiful area of Maryland's eastern shore, right off the Chesapeake Bay, when the sound of a small plane, probably a 172, broke the stillness of my kayaking. And I looked up, and it was kind of low, flying in what I knew probably to be the Cambridge-Dorchester Airport. And in the midst of kayaking, turned around and said to my husband of 25 years, "I've got it." And being the reason we've been married 25 years is Brent was smart enough to say, "Great." And we laughed then, and then I said, "Air Fair America. It's a culinary journey across the American Skyway. We're going to travel to and land at the small and regional airports. We're going to get off the plane and really discover what lies behind each of those airports. We'll eat at the restaurants. We'll go into the hangars. We'll meet the pilots and the people. Maybe we'll go on another air adventure. We'll go up in a balloon or fly in a warbird." And literally, my husband's jaw is dropping, and he says to me, "What possessed you to come up with that idea?" And I said, "That plane that just pierced the quiet is probably landing at the Cambridge airport. They're probably going to stop at Kay's. Maybe they'll have crab cakes or crab balls, enjoy her crab soup and home-baked pies. I think that there's a story to be told." And as a marketing person, there's always a story to be told. And that was the spark. And from then, I spent about 6 months doing my research, and I discovered, you know, I visited close to 4 dozen airport restaurants. I talked to hundreds of pilots. I met with the most fascinating people. I was given access into the most amazing hangars where they would roll back that door and my jaw would drop. I couldn't believe the love, the care, the passion, the people that were in this world. And OPS, there was some great food. So
nice.
That's what started it. And I took this idea to a producer, a known production company, and I said, "I envision a TV show. I envision a website. I see a radio show. I see people, those 380 million of us that live in this great country, who aren't the 600,000 pilots, who don't know about this world, but we love food. We love discovery. You know, look at the popularity of antique and picker shows. People love to know where the there is. And, you know, they love to know a secret. They love authentic destinations that are unique. And I found that this was an area that, in my experience, these airport restaurants, people didn't know about. And that was fun. It was fun. I've been writing about it and, you know, tweeting about it. I've written cover magazine articles. I've been asked to speak about this. So there's an aha moment, and I love being able to introduce people to something wonderful that they don't know about, that they can then become a supporter, a patron. Heck, maybe they sign up to take those flying lessons. And at the very least, you know, when GA is threatened, maybe they come out and support because they know about the value then of that small airport to their community. So we're taking that $100 hamburger and popularizing it for the masses as a $10 hamburger.
And, you know, what came out in all of that was so many people probably thought when we first mentioned it that you're writing a book or you have a website or something like that. This is about a TV show that's going to be the outcome, correct?
Correct, correct. It is a TV show in development. I always imagine this story being told on multiple platforms. And television, whether it's the TV you watch that's the box in your living room or the, you know, the MacBook that's in front of you, whatever form it takes, it's that storytelling that we're going to do visually. And I partnered with a great, great production company, Interface Media Group, out of Washington, D.C. My executive producer is an Emmy Award-winning producer who was the first Turner Broadcasting original content developer. So he was the guy Ted Turner hired back in the 80s.
Wow.
When cable was, yeah, he's a great guy. He's a Georgia native, who just loved this idea, and we connected immediately, and he wanted to take it to market. As he said to me, I've flown over 3 million miles in my life, and producing for the past 40 years all over the world. He hates flying. He never feels safer than when he's in a small plane where he can see the pilot and see the ground.
Cool.
And
he should talk to my wife.
Give me your name. I'll have him call him. But he's just he's embraced this. And together we have been pitching this idea, Airfare, to a number of targeted television stations who have shown good interest. And we are now casting in this crazy world of TV production, which is not a world I knew heretofore. What I've learned is talent drives a lot of the shows. And what those outlets are looking for are those authentic storytellers, those pilots, those aviation buffs, those people who can bring this to life so that when they land and they go in the hangar or they go in the terminal or they go into the kitchen, they go up in that balloon or out on that glider, that the viewers at home are watching it through someone's eyes who knows what they're talking about and who inspires us.
Gosh, so, now it sounds like you're talking about me. As I put my name in the hat.
Absolutely. You know, I think that what we've learned is there are so many great personalities in aviation. I mean, I had the opportunity this year to go to Sun and Fun for the first time. Or as I tell people, I am no longer a Sun and Fun virgin. But wow, was that an experience. You know, the people that I met who just brought this to life at every turn, I would say, gosh, he or she would be a great host, or boy, they'd be a great guest, or, oh, I'd love to go to their, you know, I'd love to go to Waco and go with Peter up in one of his planes. I mean, everywhere I went, again, I'm an armchair aviator. I don't fly, but I've been bitten by the bug, and I want to take this story and tell it to a much broader audience than that which flies or wants to fly.
Very, very cool. And, you know, you mentioned you're not a pilot, but anyone that loves aviation is part of the community. And as people have heard me say many times over, that community is made up of two words, common unity. And it's that thing that binds us together and bonds us together. And so you have it, but what you're starting to experience is you're not alone, right? That we all have this passion for this thing called aviation because it, as Al and I were talking, our little value prop is it just brings so much enjoyment to us, and it's seeing the world that, in a way that so many people don't see.
So true. So true. You know, once you break the terra firma and you leave the two-dimensional for the three-dimensional, it's just people are so giving in this community, and that was one of the things that's been so much fun for me. You know, when I left my C jobs, and I said, I want to enjoy every day. I want to wake up and be passionate about what I do. I couldn't have done that without a very giving and generous community. Mm-hmm. And this community is unbelievable. I mean, from the 78-year-old former Beth Steele steelworker, you know, welder who took me up in his beautiful 1946 Avanca, and flew me over Beth Steele, you know, which is the big shipyard steel manufacturer in Baltimore. Back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you know, to, you know, tech executives who have taken me up in their jets. It's just a community that has this, to your point, Mark, common unity. It's that bond, whether they're in gliders or they're in, you know, a Gulfstream. They care and they're passionate, and I love that. And I love the fact that, you know, I've learned that, although my goal was different when I started, right? It's a food show, it's a travel show, it's a history show. But now I've become that aviation enthusiast. Now I can almost recognize certain planes and cite certain facts and be a little bit of a tiny, tiny bit of a subject matter person without being a subject matter expert, enough to be dangerous.
I still want to see you get your license, though, sometime soon. I hope that's a goal of yours. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. You've never driven with me. Let's stop there and we'll go on to the next thing. I'm right. better at marketing and telling stories than I am at driving or flying. So let's.
very good.
So how do you tell this story to the outside world? You know, us pilots and people that get it, you know, they understand and believe in it and, you know, invest that in it almost on a daily basis. But how do you tell the story to, you know, the general public?
Great question. I think the way you tell the story, first and foremost, is you introduce people to something that they connect with, like food. People love food. They love dining. They love finding that great restaurant. And so when I discovered that people weren't even aware in their own communities of the restaurants at their own airports, and again, I cite Maryland. We have this terrific place called Kay's in Cambridge with incredible crab cakes and crab dishes and oyster clubs. We have this beautiful white tablecloth restaurant in Hagerstown, Maryland. It's been operating for 51 years by the same family. White tablecloth, piano bar, exquisite. Again, if you grew up in that community, you probably had your first, you know, your prom date was there, or you know, your anniversary, or your, you know, your mother's day dinners were there. But outside that, people who go there and to these places, to the Kays and the Knicks, almost don't think about the fact that they're at airport.
Right, right.
Right? And I see that time and time again. They're just going to Knicks or Kays or fill in the blank. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law live in Schaumburg, Illinois, and they have for almost 25 years. And when I told them what I was doing, and I was going to ask them, being that they were in Schaumburg, if they had ever been to Pilot Pete's, which of course is at the Schaumburg airport, before I even had the words out of my mouth, they said, "Oh my goodness, we eat at Pilot Pete's at the Schaumburg airport at least once a month." We didn't even think about the fact. I mean, we knew it was at an airport. We loved the plane spotting, but we didn't make the connection that there were other places like this. So I think the first thing you do to tell the story is you bring people to someplace fun that we know is already a popular genre.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Pilot Pete's, which I see is on your homepage of airfareamerica.net. But I worked in Schaumburg. The airplane that I fly is in Wheeling. I would drive to Wheeling to get an airplane to fly to Schaumburg just to have lunch. So we're also a little crazy.
That is funny.
Thank you for being nice.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a cognitive dissonance, but I get where you're going. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we want to tell the story by getting people out and aware in the way that resonates with them, right? It's what's sure. meaningful and relevant to you. From a TV production standpoint, we know that food shows are incredibly popular. We know that picking shows or antique shows, whether it's an antique roadshow on PBS or American Pickers, we love to peer behind, you know, the door and see what's in something. So again, and that's part of this emotional pull of going to some of these airports. You know, you get to discover something that's different that you weren't aware of. And then, of course, there's a popularity with aviation shows. Now, I think some of them are a little bit more either very aviation-centric, like The Aviators, which I have to tell you, I love that show, but it can be a little wonky, right? Sometimes I feel like I need a little Rosetta Stone when I'm listening to it because of the alphabet soup that they use to describe certain things, but fun to watch. You know, Flying Wild Alaska, again, people like different shows for different reasons, but there's that interest in the adventure, what's different, you know, literally and metaphorically getting in the co-pilot seat with someone and going somewhere you've never been. So that for those of us who maybe aren't really going to ever get on a glider or go up in a balloon or take that helicopter city tour of Chicago, maybe we'd love to, like the Smithsonian show, that profiles each state from above, the aerial shows.
Mm-hmm.
We love to see it. We love to be part of it without necessarily being part of it sometimes. So it's a little bit of the armchair aviator in all of us. And then I think, too, and I would add this because, you know, I'm a daughter of a military officer. There's that, and you'll forgive me for saying it this way, there is a romance, there is a respect, there is something that is so purposeful today with aviation from a, you know, a military standpoint. It harkens back to some roots, the times of, you know, perseverance, the great personalities, the pilots who were the breakthroughs, the women working, the WASPs. I mean, I have spoken to people, and I'm going to go nameless on this one, but there's a certain governor in my state whose mother learned to fly at 16 at Smithfield in Indiana. And wow. She and I had a lovely conversation one day about Airfare America because, you know, she said to me, my goodness, Andrea, I was part of this greatest generation that learned to fly to save a nation. And so, you know, here you are trying to shine a light on something that I don't see people talking about anymore. So I think from that patriotic perspective, there's, and again, that's the Pollyanna in me, there's something really special about this community. So.
Yeah,
we violently agree.
And patriotism.
I love it. Well, you know what's, the more we talk about this community theme, you know, you think about airports and how vital they are to a community. And, you know, you fly over Maryland, which is a small state compared to others, but, you know, there's 36 airports, you know, and think about how accessible those are to each community and really, you know, people don't realize that they're in the back, you know, their own backyards and these little gems kind of exist. So what are the reactions of people when they find out, you know, this stuff exists and, you know, how do they spread the word?
Wow. That is such a great question.
Wow. You're two for two, Al.
All right.
No, Al, I have to, because you went right to the heart of my former life, which is an economic developer. And when I would tell people that Maryland had 36 airports, you know, the jaws go slack, their eyes go wide, and the first thing they say is, where are they? So ironically, from an economic development perspective, our ability to communicate these tools, airports are tools, they're economic development resources to communities. There are businessmen and businesswomen who are able to work in communities that might not be in city centers because they can get to their suppliers, they can get to their chains, they can get to their, whatever their nature of their industry is, using their local airport. I mean, business and general aviation oftentimes go hand in hand. You know, it's not, I'm constantly debunking the myth that, you know, general aviation is a rich man or a rich woman's playground. You know, steel workers and former, you know, military officers and the like that I meet, they're not rich. This is a love, it's a passion, it's a pursuit, it's a hobby. And in the case of a business decision, it's something that they use so that they can make a better business operation. I translated my, oh my goodness, I had no idea there were 36 public airports in Maryland into a conference we're actually holding, the Maryland Economic Development Association, on the business of general aviation and its economic impact next month in Maryland. So we're going to speak to economic developers, government officials, transportation officials, planning officials about how they can better work with those 36 airports in Maryland to strengthen their local economy and their local communities. So we were very purposeful here in doing that. But I know in other states, Georgia just recently had a similar conference, again, economic development and aviation. So I think part of it is using that bully pulpit and that platform that is our relationship with our government and our elected officials to advocate. This isn't just about going to the FAA, right? When airports are threatened with tower closures or with user fees. You know, it starts at home. We've got to build this community so that they know about their own resources and their own assets from an aviation perspective long before it gets to the federal government and becomes an issue. Because at that point, it's either too late or we go into these crazy modes of sequestration. And I mean, I don't have to tell you what that's done to air shows alone and the economic impact. I read today that more than 67 air shows have already been canceled this year, and they expect it to, the number to rise to 100. Well, from an economic development standpoint, that hurts small businesses. That hurts the businesses at the airport communities. It hurts the local suppliers. I just, you know, that's a whole nother show. We won't go there. Let's go back to airfare.
Okay. Yeah. No, we've talked about that a lot. You know, one of the things as you talk about this, it expands a little bit beyond, and Al and I were talking about restaurants that are maybe just off the grounds. Maybe you land your little airplane and then you walk across a highway. You take a crew car and drive 2 minutes, or you get their van. Are those included as well as you define it, or are you the ones that are physically on the property?
We defined it if you could walk there.
Okay. I like
so,
that.
So there are enough that are just outside of the perimeter proper that we know people fly to, from the Outer Banks to spots all over the Pacific Northwest. Again, just leave the airport and go across the street. They're part of Airfare Story.
Yeah. No, I think that really opens up the gamut. And, you know, to whether or not the restaurant is on the field or not, but, you know, it invites people to check out the airport. You know, if they're across the street, they're certainly going to see the airplanes take off and land and pique their curiosity. And, you know, as we've been talking here, one thing that I really, you know, like is that, hey, if a community really wanted to turn their airport around, you know, they should really have the shining, you know, restaurant in town at the airport, you know, to really showcase and get people using it one way or the other and all that. So I don't know. I think that's pretty cool.
I love it when I read stories about the community, whether it's the mayor and the economic development officials or others who take that same perspective you've just outlined. Because what happens is they really change their mindset and they get out of this, that airport restaurant is a revenue generator, to it is a destination that is an attraction magnet. And when they make that switch, then they're not trying to nickel and dime a restaurant operator who's probably already dealing with very thin margins of profitability. And they try and join hands and come up with a way to make their airport a real destination. And I've seen that in so many ways. There was recently in West Virginia, an airport just negotiated with a local Italian restaurant that had been very popular, is very popular in the community, but that had been displaced because of a fire. And so the airport, having a vacant restaurant, when they heard about the fire, went to this restaurant operator and made the case for why they should come to the airport. And I see that time and time again. Again, in our little airport on the eastern shore of Delaware, the Sussex County Airport, the operator was no longer able to be profitable for the airport from the lease he had signed. So he has left, but they've brought in a very popular local chain. And by local chain, the operator had four of this one particular restaurant. So he's now opened a fifth. Well, it gave it instant name recognition. So to the community. And the press has been abuzz. It just opened officially yesterday. And everyone's excited that there's a new Arenas, it's the name of the restaurant, at the Sussex County Airport. And we see that trend. That's one of the trends, actually, that I've seen as I've been tracking and monitoring this industry and the scene for the past 2 years, are some of the local restaurant operators who are now looking at airport restaurants. Food trucks are also paying attention because it gives them an accessible way to have a bricks and mortar location when they've been, you know, nomadic, in their existence as a food truck operator. One of the popular, one of the more popular airport restaurants that I found had been at the Truckee Tahoe Airport. And the longtime operator decided to retire, you know, 15 years in the food business, running a great restaurant that the locals loved, decided to step down and, you know, go play with her grandchildren. And, you know, the community was, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We love that place. And the most popular food truck in Truckee Tahoe, ironically, stepped in. And so the red truck, in Truckee Tahoe is now Red Truck on the Runway. So they still have their food truck operation, which goes to festivals and office complexes and, you know, popular city parks. But now they have a bricks and mortar operation. And I was talking to someone who just flew out of there, and they told me the food is incredible. And people drive in now because they know they don't have to find where the truck is that week. They can go there and eat right at the airport. So interesting trends that we're seeing.
And is it always about the food? Or seems to me in some of the places that we hang out, the food is not the attraction. It is the airplanes, but it still brings the community together.
I think that in many cases, it is the food that is the hook, but what keeps them there or what inspires or delights or entertains people is the aviation community.
Right.
It's the kids that put down their PlayStation or their iPod or whatever they're working on these days, to watch the planes. It's, you know, the couples that sit outside, on a Friday afternoon on an outdoor patio and have an adult beverage while there's music and entertainment and planes. There's art displays. I mean, I've been into a number of restaurants, at airports that have beautiful art displays, local artists. Sometimes it's an aviation artist, sometimes it isn't. So they become community hubs, just like the airports become community hubs.
Yeah.
So I have to ask though, may I?
Please.
Because I've been talking a lot. I want to know where you two like to fly. What restaurants are your favorites?
That's interesting. You know, there's two stories I have, or at least the two name drops. One that's been somewhat in the news because I got my license back in the 70s, and even then everyone flew to Janesville, Wisconsin for the restaurant from Iowa City, which is where I was living at the time. And they recently closed because of a lease issue, as I understand it, and I don't claim to be an insider on that, but it was like, oh my God, there's no restaurant at Janesville. And I don't know that it had the greatest food, but they had nice people. And you know, to your point, after a child would be sticking his head out with his hands against the glass, I would invite him out and say, hey, you want to go sit in an airplane and really make aviation dream come true as far as getting to sit. So that was a favorite place of mine just because of the people we met there. But actually, I'm going to save my next one. Al, why don't you hear yours? Where is your favorite?
I got to say that hands down, my absolute favorite is at Eagle Creek Airport in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah.
Rick's Boatyard Cafe.
Yes.
When I was in college, I was giving a lot of flight instruction lessons to some students outside of the university setting. And there was a time where I went there every day of the week for lunch on a different cross country from Champaign, Illinois to Indianapolis.
I got paid for it.
Yeah, and was bought lunch. It was kind of nice. I'm like, so that place definitely fed a starving college student.
Oh, that's great.
And you know, just the setting and the community, and you know, if you go there right around this time of the year, you know, they have the Indianapolis 500, and it's kind of a great merge of, you know, race fans, you know, even some of the race, you know, superstars, the drivers, they're there having dinner or lunch or whatever. And then, if you fly in, you know, so now there's an aviation group. So it's kind of a cool mix. And let me expose one helpful hint is that if you're there on a Saturday night, the place is usually rocking. And I was quoted a 3-hour wait one time.
Oh my goodness. Ooh.
Yeah. And it was really bad. So then I said, okay, well, you know, they said, do you want to wait? And I'm like, well, I don't really have a choice. We flew in from Chicago. And they're like, okay, we'll seat you right away.
Nice.
So, yeah, so if you fly in, you've got a long wait, let them know that you flew in, and they'll seat you right away.
That's a great
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
That's a great tip.
So,
well, what's yours, or is your favorite the local ones there?
Mine?
Yes.
You haven't given up enough of your favorites yet.
Well, you know what's funny? I'm thinking about this favorite thing, and I don't know that I mean, I love Pilot Pete's because of the food. I love Lone Rock, Wisconsin because you can only order one pancake. It's so big and fills up the plate. It's just a little shack at the end of the runway. I like going to Watertown, Wisconsin because I can walk across the highway and there's five different places I can walk to. So each one of them on that day becomes my favorite, if that counts.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
I would say it's only recently opened, but I'm curious if anyone's been to the farm on Star yet at Chippewa Valley in Eau Claire.
No, I haven't.
Actually, I was just thinking about Eau Claire today.
A new restaurant opened up by a woman who had been a local caterer, actually another trend. I've met quite a few caterers who have gone to airport restaurants and brought their catering clientele with them. So they also do special events. But she opened up the farm on Star, I believe with her husband. And, you know, again, farm to table kind of restaurant, looks terrific. Just opened about, I want to say 4 or 5 weeks ago. One of the newer ones.
Fly out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
there
right.
You go.
Fly out.
I'll join you.
All right. Excellent. We got to. We'll pay, you come out here and we'll pay for it. How about that? The pay for the lunch, not the flight.
I have, you know, I always ask pilots, what's your favorite? You know, and it's hard. You know, it's funny. People don't. I always think it's a question they can answer, like my top three. And they don't, they struggle. Well, they're like, well, it depends what I'm in the mood for. If it's breakfast, I like this. If I'm with friends, I like that. This is another one I hear a lot. If it's with my wife, it's a different restaurant.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, it's the difference between, you know, people sitting around, you know, Tales from the Sky Cafe, right? The little California diner versus wanting to go to Typhoon in California, which is the elegant jazz and sushi bar, which is on an airport.
Is that in Santa Monica?
It is in Santa Monica.
All right.
Yeah, sushi and jazz. I mean, and that's one where, again, people know the restaurant, and then you remind them it's at an airport, and what's one of the reasons they think it's like, yeah, you're right, it is at an airport. I have so many favorites. I mean, every time I go to a new one, it's my new favorite.
See, you sound like me now.
There's a couple good, some surprisers that, really, you know, that I've been to lately. One was in Hutchinson, Kansas, called the Airport Steakhouse. And I was there just before Christmas with a student of mine. And I tell you what, you know, I did not have high hopes for this place. You know, when we walked in, nobody was there. It was dark. It was dated and things like that, which I think a lot of these airport restaurants have some issues with of redecorating and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so the server came over and I was like, okay, this is just going to be, you know, your standard, you know, greasy burnt hamburger. But, you know, the first thing she said, so, okay, we're offering specials today and we have a prime rib pot pie. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, sign me up. And my student at the time said that too. And the thing showed up and holy cow, it was probably the best thing I had eaten in the month of December. It was
wow.
And he
awesome.
Ate a lot in December.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, one thing, Andrew, that you brought up and that it's tough for pilots to do it. This is my philosophy. And another thing we were talking about as the show started tonight, that I think in so many things in life, people are focused on the goal. We'll call it the destination. And the journey is kind of that thing you got to do to get there. And in the pilot community, we're much more focused on the journey, and the goal is, okay, that's what happens. And that's why I think I have trouble, because I don't care where I'm eating, as long as I get to fly to get there, I've had a great day.
Right, right. And I think, as with all things, right, in life, it is the journey, not the destination. And that's what I want people to do. I want them to get off of the highways, onto the byways, if they're not on the skyways. And discover really what lies just beyond what you see. And that becomes part of their journey. When I'm sitting at Kay's in Cambridge, you know, it's a beautiful little rural community with this wonderful little airport and restaurant. One of those airports that doesn't even have a fence around it. I mean, on that alone, I love it.
Yes.
But just down that road a few miles is where Harriet Tubman, the famed African-American abolitionist, you know, the woman who freed, you know, hundreds of people from slavery on the Underground Railroad, that's where she was born and raised. And so you can take a slight detour from that airport and be part of history. So that's the journey. I don't want people to be satisfied that the airport's the destination. I want them to use that as a place that they can think about what's next. You know, if you're in Easton, another little beautiful Chesapeake Bay airport, literally tiny little airport, sits in the middle of a tiny community, happens to be a fairly wealthy community because you get a lot of, let's just say, the D.C. money, right, comes to
nice.
Easton. But there is a local businessman who, when he was 50 years old, decided that he was now successful enough that that dream that he had of either learning to fly or go to college, he went to college. He never learned to fly. It's a beautiful story. But anyway, he decided at 50 to get his pilot's license. Now, probably in his 70s, I don't quite know how old Mr. Blair is, but what I can tell you is that he has a hangar of 22 meticulously restored vintage Warbirds.
Oh, my goodness.
Private collection.
Wow.
Along with some beautiful cars. I mean, there's Jack. I mean, but he does this, and he employs people because he cares. And every one of them, he flies.
Nice.
Wow. They're all flown.
Nice.
And, you know, so, I mean, just, you know, I see the preservation, the passion that goes into this and the preservation. And, you know, a few times a year, he opens up those hangar doors. They roll back, and he opens them up to the public. And he gets rides, and the kids get to see them. And, you know, these are the people that really, they're carrying the torch.
Right.
And those are the things that I also, this show is going to help introduce you to. But I want people, when they get to that airport, to maybe, oh, look, they do a discovery flight for $49. Or I can take a balloon, you know, and maybe propose to my fiance. We want people to not just go to these airports to eat, but to understand the fabric of the community, the culture, just everything that there is there. And again, they're going because it's fun, right? It has to be cool. If not, why go?
Exactly. Actually, and it's somewhat a little tangential here, but you mentioned Hagerstown, and I looked over at Al. I don't know if he could. What do you know about Hagerstown and its connection to aviation?
Hagerstown. It was
40RC, I'll say.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was a famous aviator, Richard Collins, and he based his airplane, 40 Romeo Charlie, at Hagerstown, Maryland. So it's the first thing I thought of. At least I think that's it. He always talked about Hagerstown. So as soon as you said that, I made the connection to a much broader aviation topic that's very important to a lot of us. So I thought that was interesting.
I love it. Well, Hagerstown is also was the home to where they built the flying boxcar, the Fairchild Industries.
How cool is that? I'm coming.
I did not know that.
Oh, it is unbelievable. I mean, and back in the heyday, employed 10,000. I mean, these were Rosie the Riveters. I have been in there. I have seen the pictures. And, you know, the stories need to be told today because those who were there and lived it aren't going to be with us that much longer.
Right.
You know, and
very
so
true.
We did a, you were asking about the television show earlier. You know, my status on that is we have produced what's kind of the industry standard, which is a promotional reel. And we went out to Hagerstown to film it. We went to Nick's. We went and filmed some of the old box cars and the PT 1917s. Oh, excuse me. I forget which PT it was that they built there. But you know, we got to really take a look at airfare as if it were happening in Hagerstown. So, you know, we went into the hangars, we met the people, we went up on a flight. We had great crab cakes for lunch at Nick's. And now we have a sizzle reel, which we will be putting up on our airfare website within the next 2 weeks. So I'll be sure to tweet it out and post it on our Facebook page, Airfare America.
Oh, that'd be great. That sounds awesome. I mean, I get excited more and more hearing about this. This is like, you know, the TV show is going to be a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, but like airports, hangars, and grass fields or something. Airport, you know, thing. It's it's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
So what's the timeline, or is that something that can't be predicted at this point?
You know, you try and keep it moving forward. Our time frame is to do the casting now in the summer. We're in negotiations with our different outlets. We're hopeful that we would be producing a true pilot in the fall. That's the plan, and the pilot would be an hour. So a sizzle reel is very different, you know, the promotional reel from a pilot. The pilot is like watching the show. So I'm hoping that by the end of 2013, it will be my magical year. I turn 50. We do a deal for the TV show, and then I get to travel to all these small airports and finally get to Rick's Boatyard Cafe.
Yay. Yeah. Delicious. We'll meet you there.
Yeah. Might I, if you go there for lunch, might I suggest the Grouper Reuben? It's delicious.
Oh, I'm making a note of it now. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, so that's the time frame. You know, we're just out there trying to still a little bit in the research mode. I mean, constantly, right? You never stop asking the question, what's your favorite place? Where would you recommend that we go? Pilots, as I said, this community is so generous. Are there hangars at some of these airports that your listeners would recommend that our producers take a look at? You know, I've seen those hangar doors roll back and seen a 1917 Woody wagon. I've seen beautifully restored Stearman biplanes that, you know, pull banners for their owners in addition to being beautiful antiques. So, you know, we're always looking for who are the people like the gentleman I mentioned earlier who had that beautiful hangar with 22 planes, or the former steel worker who had that beautifully restored Ivanka. You know, who are the people and the places that we should meet and discover? What are the flight experiences?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've only recently, and I say recently in the past 6 months, really started to catalog, and I catalog all of this. I've got a database of over 400 experiences that we've found that we're going to be putting up on a Google map this summer. Free. You don't have to pay a thing. We're just going to put it on a Google map and let people learn what we've learned. And as information changes, because let's face it, guys, it is the, you know, restaurant business, so places close.
Yeah.
You know, they let us know, and I change them, you know, so we'll keep it updated. But we're going to be releasing that Google map. We're going to be putting the sizzle reel online. We'll be putting an updated website. The website you've referred to was our placeholder as we've been in development. So it's a constant process. We're just asking a lot of questions and gaining good insight. And, you know, hopefully good news will be coming shortly with regards to talent and, TV outlets. And, you know, again, I'm an open book with regards to this community. Please, you know, contact me and let me know places you would recommend. Don't assume that I know about it.
Yeah, that's cool. So, you know, the one thing, especially as we hit something about the 18th of May, we started to see all of our fly-in pancake breakfast in the Midwest after a long winter. And obviously that's not a restaurant, but yet it's such a part of the fabric of aviation to go to these things. Do they have a place anywhere in your vision of what this is all about?
Absolutely. Oh, I love that question. They do. We call them just the fly-in events. So there are fly-in events that are big air shows. There are fly-in events that are wings and wheels or pancake breakfast. They run the gamut, and we group them as events. As long as they're open to the general public, they have a place on our show.
Cool. The other thing is, I'm listening to you talk. Obviously, you can tell that you're in marketing, and you have a way of painting a picture in all of our minds, and I'm thinking this is also not only a great TV opportunity, call me old school, but a book. Tell me you're writing a book about all of this.
We are fashioning a cookbook book with companion with this, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you do a great job at, like I say, painting this picture that's very vivid, at least in my mind. So.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, and as I think I shared with you, you know, I have a face for radio, so I see this as a radio show.
Well, Al and I, we resemble that remark, I'll just say.
Yeah, we're right in that category, too.
We played the video a little bit. We decided we better stick with just the audio portion of this.
Yeah. Exactly. So what along your journey, you know, going to from airport to airport or exploring the opportunities with the show or you know filling all this with content, what's been the most surprising thing in a positive way that you know that kind of caught you off guard throughout all this?
Oh, I think the thing that really caught me off guard was how little people knew how disconnected they were from general aviation. I'm not a Pollyanna, but I had the fortune to live in California during the mid-70s and remember that heyday of general aviation, in addition to being, you know, a military child of a military family. I remembered that pilots were people you knew.
Right.
You know, they were your neighbors. They were your uncles. They were your friends. They were your family members. And that's coming from a non-aviation background. And so while my eye and my ear were always a little bit more in tune, perhaps than maybe, you know, a young person today, I was shocked at just how little the community was connected to this. You know, aviation and general aviation has a huge economic impact in this country from the manufacturers, which, my God, the storied history, forgetting Ohio and North Carolina to this day, you know, the Midwest, Florida, where so many of our planes are still made. There was just no real realization of this community. And I think that was the thing that surprised me, unfortunately, in a negative way. The thing that surprised me, and again, surprise in quotes, maybe that was more revealing to me, was how generous and diverse the community of pilots were.
Right, yeah. I think the pilot community is very, you know, they're out there with open arms, you know, no matter with who, what, or whatnot. And, you know, the one thing that I've noticed at these airport restaurants is you fly in, you know, there's always a little kid there or whatnot, and they're just thrilled to death to see an airplane park. Or the mom is there and says, hey, look at this one. It's going. It's ready to go. You know, and then, you know, a pilot overhears that and then ends up, you know, saying, approaching that table or that family or that child and say, hey, you want to go see the airplane? And it really just like, you know, you think that this person is bigger and mightier than Santa Claus, you know? And, it's cool. I think so. The pilot community, I think, is there. It's a great workforce. It's already out there with its open arms to connect the two.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, there's one other that's a little, I don't want to say sad, but there's something very somewhat melancholy about it. And that is, to your question, what has surprised me? The number of pilots and a lot of military pilots primarily, with regards to this next comment, who go to airport restaurants and then reminisce. The stories I've overheard, not being a purposeful eavesdropper, but sometimes you're in such close quarters, you can't help but tune into what they're saying. But I recently was at a restaurant in Atlanta, and there was a table of, I'm going to assume they must have been Korean War, but possibly World War II pilots. They were much older. And these gentlemen were, you know, on in years. But still, they were there. You could tell this was a regular thing that they did. And they were talking about their time abroad, overseas, in the air, with such clarity, with such conviction, that it was just, you couldn't listen to it without getting teary. I mean, you know, you're sitting there thinking, I'm listening to living legends probably talk about, you know, some of the deeds that they've done, and I don't have the context that they do, but again, their conviction and their clarity. And I've heard that at so many different restaurants. I mean, yeah. I was at Voyager at the Mojave Spaceport in the middle of the Mojave Desert after all the plain graveyards, you know, and, you know, dragged my daughter there. She was like, why are we going? I said, shh, eat the fish tacos. It'll be fabulous, honey. and, you know, again, these tables of veterans, you know, maybe they've retired there because of the Air Force base. Maybe they were attracted because they were working for one of the firms, you know, the many engineering firms or contractors that's involved in a lot of the development projects that, you know, emanated from the Mojave Spaceport. That's where Burt Rutan created Voyager, ergo why they call it Voyager. And, you know, again, it's just story after story after story. And, boy, if I were an oral historian, if I would remember to switch my, you know, my iPhone recorder on, if I would remember to ask people, you know, to your point, the book, because they're just, you can't make this stuff up. And right. They're real people. This isn't reality TV like reality TV. It's real people, real stories.
Yeah, we have that here. You know, we have a group of pilots probably in the 80 to 90 year old, and they always called themselves the Lunch Waffa. And as they got together every week to talk exactly as you are saying. And it's not always military people. I mean, I think again, this aviation grabs us at a very core part of who we are. And as you get older, maybe can't fly for medical reasons or don't fly for whatever reason, you still never lose the desire and the fun of sitting down with another pilot and talking about what we did, what we do. How great it is.
Exactly. And there you are in a public space, like a restaurant, and people like me over here, and maybe it's the kid that's gonna, you know, learn how to, he's gonna become an EAA explorer, or he's gonna join, you know, a local club, or he's gonna go up on that discovery flight. Who knows what it might be that, you know, then propels him or her to. And it's the hers, I think, that are missing. I mean, as a woman, as the mother of a daughter, you know, a 21-year-old, I was surprised at just how much this is still a male's world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would hope that something like airfare will inspire young women, you know, to think about learning to fly, for whether it's personally or for professional, you know, reasons. You know, just like guys have become the chefs in all the kitchens that we're seeing, right? The hosts of all the food shows, they've become the ones that are the defining faces of the foodie movement. I'd like to see women become the defining new face of the aviation movement, you know?
Well, that, and I think youth in general. I mean, it's as we look around our community, it's very much on the age spectrum more toward the latter part. And we've commented many times on the show how we don't see, like when I was a kid, everyone loved airplanes and cars, and now they love Xbox and iPads and iPhones.
Yeah.
And it's not just a gender thing. I think it's an age thing, and we've got to get people interested because it has so much to offer, and they just don't know it yet.
Oh, and it's at the core. You know, I can wonk out on you on this one, but, you know, it's the core of STEM education. I mean, what better way to bring that to life? So you're so right.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. You know, it's going back to your point of, having women be kind of the new aviation movement. There's a young lady out there, Amelia Earhart, who was a guest on our show, and she's doing some pretty cool things for aviation. Yeah. I think she just started her, the Fly with Amelia Foundation.
Yeah.
She's out in Denver, Colorado, and I don't know, that's kind of I could see that happening. Having a push and, you know, having aviation, women and food. And I don't know. I think that sounds like a great way to spread the word.
I agree. In fact, I've spoken with Amelia before, and she is a foodie.
Great. I think when
and
she was
beautiful
on.
Beautiful, and she's an aviator. So.
Yeah. I think when she was on the show, she was doing a vegan challenge, and she said, Oreos were vegan.
Yeah.
Vegan food.
She joined us from a Super Bowl party too, so that was I'm sure had a lot more than vegan stuff going on there.
That is so funny.
That is indeed.
So have you been to Sky Galley at Lucan Field?
Oh, in Cincinnati?
Yep.
No. Oh, no. Yeah. You know what? I've flown in there, and I don't think
I go to Sporty's Pilot Shop when I go to Cincinnati.
You go for the flying
bird. You have to go to Sky Galley. Kurt Brockaville, who is the owner-operator there, is another one of my trends, right? Are the restaurants that are being opened at airports are chefs who are going back home to where they were raised. And that's one of the cases. So people moving back to the community that they grew up in and opening up restaurants in their local airport. And he has a great reputation for his food and for his cooking style. Kind of comes off that, you know, top chef mode look to him. And he, again, he's not the only one that I've seen like that. There are quite a few. I met a young gentleman who's been cooking literally at five-star resorts up and down the East Coast and moved to back home to Winder, Georgia, which is a little town southwest of Athens, Georgia, and couldn't find a restaurant to buy, so he leased the one at the airport. Classically trained culinary chef, you know, there at his little airport so that he could have his own restaurant in his hometown. And there's quite a few like that. So it's another great trend.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm taking notes. So, Al, we're going to Sky Galley. We're going to the Farm on Star in Eau Claire.
I like that.
Yeah. And we're going to build a list here, and we're going to take our flying club to all these places.
Perfect.
And then you're going to
write about them, and you're going to email me and post them on Airfare America's Facebook page and then on our website. Because as I said, we're going to launch this great interactive map soon. So you'll see the 400 places that I've found. That in every single one I've either visited or I've spoken to the people. So, you know, I'm looking for more ideas. I invite anyone to reach out to me. I'm easy to find at Andrea@airfareamerica.net. Or you can post it right on our Facebook page. I respond to every email. I've been given great suggestions, as I said, on this journey. A lot of times coming out of the pilot community, and introducing their picks to the general public. So we're trying to make this go viral, and really shine the light. So maybe those places dust off their interiors. Maybe they do a little bit more because they've got more, patrons to make that place shine a little brighter. But I think at the end of the day, more is more, that more people coming into these restaurants, I don't want them all to have three-hour waits, though, like Rick's Boatyard. But, you know, we want them to be successful, and we want them to be the best that they can be, so that, you know, again, it's just another way of driving business and driving attention and shining the light so that, you know, the next time, well, hopefully there isn't a next time, there's a threat to general aviation, but that we return the luster and we create a more robust pipe of people who either are going to be pilots or are going to support their general aviation community. Maybe they move their business to an airport. Maybe they, who knows what it is. But I think the more attention we shine, the more people that are aware of this, really the better it is for the community. And we're going to get there not by just the people who are flying. We need to get the rest of America on board with this. So
we are in violent agreement.
My premise.
There we
get
go.
Get them through their stomach, right? Just like the way to a man is through his stomach. The way to the aviation community is salvation.
There you go. We agree.
$10 hamburger save aviation. I don't know, but we're going to try.
And we're not only going to post and write you, but we had as a guest a gentleman that's starting SparkReel.com. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's a way. It's like a LinkedIn and YouTube combined. So your way to share your aviation love via video. So, Al, you and I are going to go to some restaurants, and we're going to do a quick little – maybe we're casting after all for this thing.
But, yeah.
But we'll send you a little video of us eating at a restaurant. We'll even take a little picture of it, and we'll see if that can't get some things going at the different restaurants.
I love it. We will absolutely get that out as well. Well, this has been such a great time talking with both of you. I've learned so much, and I can't wait to hear your reports on the – Farm at Star and on Kirby's Place at Lucan Field and any other place you go. And again, feel free to call me at any time with your suggestions or questions. And I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, it sounds, so let it be written, so let it be done, as I like to say.
You got it.
Perfect.
Thank you, Andrea, for your time tonight.
Thank you so
and
much.
We look forward to seeing you at some restaurant very, very soon.
Absolutely. Let's break bread and do that soon.
All right. Terrific.
Sure, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Have a great Bye night.
Now.
Bye. What, so you mean we got to fly across America and eat?
Yeah, darn.
Shoot. I got to see if my appointment book is available to accommodate.
I got to see me talking to my boss now. Yeah, you know what? I really need to go visit this account in Helena, Montana, which is not part of my territory, but I hear they got a great restaurant.
The T-bone is off the charts.
Actually, you know, it's interesting because there's so many restaurants. When she asked the question, what's your favorite? Lone Rock, I haven't been to in a long time, but it has that image of that huge pancake. And I hope they're not listening because it's not the nicest looking place, but it's cool because of what it is and what it looks like and the clientele, and it makes it special.
Right, right.
Right?
No, I definitely agree with that. You know, a lot of these, I think a lot of the struggles with these airport restaurants is that they don't necessarily look the best. You know, like I said, going to the place in Hutchinson, Kansas, I did not have high hopes, you know, but the food was outstanding, you know, and I think that, you know, if an airport were to rally behind the restaurant a little bit and pump a little money in, or like we saw classically in Janesville, you know, Andrea seemed to hit the nail on the head with Keeley's Cafe closing. You know, Janesville, everybody, you know, was said that, you know, here in the Chicago area would always say, let's go to Janesville. That was the place to go, you know, for airport
because it was
food.
Close. It
because
was,
close, it was cheap.
And we got to fly, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, you know, now the airport is building a new
terminal.
Which is beautiful, but now there's some lease disputes, which ultimately drives the.
Well, and exactly. And who knows if someone's playing chicken here. And I have to comment that this is all hearsay.
Right.
In terms of why they closed. It could be, I may be totally off base and I'm just listening to one source. So, you know, I do want to learn more about that because I think it's important for the community. I think it's important for, the FBO there, right? I mean, people come in, get fuel, get service, the control tower's there, and if people stop coming, that's just one more that's kind of the old song. Another
right.
The one bites the dust.
Right.
Boom.
And another one. You know what? So they had at the airport that I learned how to fly out of, which is the Mountain Home Airport in Mountain Home, Arkansas. They had a little shack in a little restaurant there. And it was called Airport Pizza and Subs.
Oh, my God. That's already it's my favorite place. I love pizza and subs.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, you know, you're sitting there. It's like Airport Pizza and Subs. What's not to like about that? And, you know, for some reason or another, they disappeared. But then they opened, you know, so that was very disappointing. But then they opened up in replace of it, a Subway. And as disgusting as that may be, or
hey, I had Subway for breakfast today.
You did?
Yeah, egg white, 6-inch egg white, tomato, cheese.
Oh my God, that sounds horrible.
Why is it horrible?
I don't know. That's
some of the meats, maybe, but the egg white sandwich. You know, I'm an old guy. I gotta have the egg whites,
man. But wow, divulging dirty food secrets here tonight.
DFS.
All right.
Dirty food secrets.
Yeah. So anyway, there is a, you know, but I got to say that at least somehow I was comforted by that Subway, even though, you know, the last place in the world you really want to eat when you think of an airport restaurant is Subway, but at least there's a restaurant on the field, you know.
Well, and you mentioned here at Pelwaukee or Chicago Executive that it had a restaurant. I've never eaten other than 94th, when it was actually not even the 94th Aero Squadron, it was something like something 94. They changed the name. But the other restaurant in the little hotel, never been there. And I don't know if it was good or not, but you couldn't bring an airplane up to it. You had to drive around the block and get to, I don't know, to me it was, I want a place at this airport where you can taxi up, park, and eat.
Right. Yeah. I think it's definitely doable, you know, but I don't know. This airport seems a little challenged, you know.
Yeah, well, the fuel costs so high, Cook County, right, and all the taxes, yeah, and right, all that.
There's a lot of factors that go into it, but no, I think that's it's pretty cool. You know, I would love to see you as the TV show host.
You know what? I would love it. You know, and I'm sure they're getting some pretty good talent. Heck, they can go get Harrison Ford. I think he's acted before. Harrison or Angelina Jolie, all these famous people that are used to flying and being in front of the camera and all. I would love to do that because you know me. How do I make a living in aviation? I've never quite figured it out. And I love to eat, I love to fly, and I love to talk.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. It would be your, like, main debut. I could see your aviation resume blossoming right here. Like, you know, private pilot, aviation radio show host, famous TV show, aviation TV show host. Well, soon you won't be answering my phone calls.
Oh, stop it. I always answer your phone calls. Soon you'll start calling me, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I think it's it's in response to the question of what are your favorites. You know, I'm not actually surprised that Andrea has a hard time getting a straight answer.
For the reason I suggested that we love the journey. We don't care about the destination.
Right.
You know, and we haven't mentioned Madison, Wisconsin. Again, we're mentioning local stuff. We obviously know that we're ignorant on all the different wonderful places in California, you know, some of the things that are highlighted on Andrea's website. But, you know, Pat O'Malley's Jet Room at Madison Airport at Wisconsin Aviation.
Yeah.
What a great destination that is. The kids, they have the big picture window. They have good food. And then you come out and you just watch a very busy airport in a capital city of a state in the Midwest. It's just good energy.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I was on the way to Chile. The last stop in the United States that we hit was Key West. And while we were waiting for overflight permits to fly over Cuba, we ended up walking over to the airline terminal and, you know, got a nice little lunch. And I had to get the classic key lime pie.
Well, just,
for dessert.
I mean, you never think about it. I love key lime pie, and I've never even been to, I've been to, is it Key Largo? You know, one key that's up near the mainland, if you will.
Yeah.
But I've never been to Key West. I've never been down those things. That to me, with an airplane, would just be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I think this is cool. I could talk forever about this.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I right now I've gone through, about 10 packages of Whoppers, a blueberry muffin, and after having French onion soup, margarita, open face sandwich, and sweet potato tater tots.
Yeah. You're like do you have a tapeworm or something like that?
People have often suggested that to me. I always talk in terms of my 2-minute feedings.
Your 2-minute feedings.
I graze all day. I'm surprised that I've kept my my figure.
Yeah.
I was going to say something my dad always said, but
yeah.
Maybe for another show.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. Well, that's nice. So, I don't know. This is kind of an exciting topic, and I kind of appreciate it. That's really the grassroots of the $100 hamburger in aviation. And you really see the link to the community. We talked about on previous episodes of what are the fences around airports? You know, all these fences go up, all these warning signs, you'll be shot on scene, blah, blah, blah. And you end up, you know, you go to the airport restaurant, and it's really this kind of like revolving door from the ramp to, you know, quote unquote outside world, and, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, you know, I'm transporting myself that, when I drove by on Palatine Road, which is on the south end of Palwaukee, today, and there's a little observation area. And you know what I envisioned? Maybe because I knew we would be talking to Andrea tonight. I envisioned a tiny little restaurant along that fence. Low, right? Not a big, so it would be something that it would not impact any kind of approach. So real low, just to have airplanes kind of flying right over the building.
Yeah.
So low to the ground, and maybe a glass roof. I don't know. It just seemed like something that I'd never seen before at an airport, and then probably for very good reason, but it may be even offset from the center line.
Right.
But something that's right there. And I think it would be a fun little restaurant, a theme that people wouldn't see, and people would come. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, right. It could be called, like, the belly landing or something like that.
Yeah, or flaps. I still want to do flaps.
Flaps.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know. I'm excited. I can't wait to see the TV show. Hopefully you'll be the host.
There we go. That would be good. Andrea, if you're still listening.
Yeah, and I'll
give me a call.
Download
Let's talk. Let's do lunch.
I love it. I love it. But I don't know. There was a there's. I've actually had. I'm going off in way left field here now.
Well, it's about time. We got to do hangar talk.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of a
2140
hangar talk thing.
Yeah.
I spent quite a bit of time on the phone this week with a lot of old airline friends. And, it was kind of a cool, time now. You know, spring is here and all that. And, it seems like spring was skipped and everything, but this new aviation leaf has kind of turned over and all my friends are getting hired at, major airlines like United, U.S. Airways and things like that.
At the regionals or the actual majors?
The actual majors.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what? It's turning around. I saw, shipments from, Gamma. Showed are up, and I think even though not significantly in some of the segments, but in all segments, if I remember right, it was in one of the periodicals or something that came out this week.
Yeah.
So that's like news we haven't heard in a long time. Usually it's turbine and the pistons are down, but I thought I saw that piston was up as well. So I think the tide is turning.
Yeah, I hope so. And, it certainly feels like it. Especially hearing all these phone calls from my friends and stuff like that. Everybody's kind of scattering and, putting in resignation letters and all that. I don't know. I'm really happy for everyone. It's quite a cool accomplishment. And for the people that are right now getting hired at the major airlines, I send them a big congratulations because it's almost like hitting the lottery. With this big pilot wave, this is like the hiring of the beginning of this, big pilot shortage that, everybody's talked about for years now, the wave of massive pilot retirements. And whoever can get in now, that is you're going to be in a good position in 10 years from now.
Or even further out, you think at some of our buddies that are approaching retirement age and they're doing the Shanghai trips twice a month and that's their job and they've reached the pinnacle of it. These young professionals that are getting in it now, in 20, 30 years, they'll be in the same position because they started at the right time and made the investment and commitment.
Right, exactly. You should become an airline pilot.
They won't hire me. I'm too close to retirement age.
Hey, they can't discriminate.
Yes, they can.
They do.
Yeah. Actually, there's so many things that I want to do. I would love... as I think I've told you before, to be an ATC air traffic controller. Would absolutely love it, but I'm too old. And it's just disappointing. So for those of you that are on the younger side listening in, don't wait. Do it now. Because at one point, if you wait, it'll be too late.
Yeah, exactly.
Ba-doom, boom.
Ba-doom. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of cool things to do in aviation. I've kind of want to... have an aviation business, and I kind of feel like it's like don't wait, do it now. And I do want to do it now, but it's like a launching such thing seems to it's difficult.
Well, and Andrea even talked about the aha moment, and we heard that from another guest. Which reminds me, from Charles Stites, of Able Flight. Remember he said he woke up one morning and just knew what he had to do, which was start Able Flight. And, I'm glad I said that because, and as he hesitates, we had a communication from, Charles this week, actually. They've got some wonderful things going on there. For those of you that either didn't listen or have forgotten, ableflight.org is an organization that's very focused on bringing aviation to those dealing with disabilities. And they work with like Purdue University, and they have airplanes with adaptive controls so that you don't need to use your feet. The rudders are controlled by the hands. And they basically will help someone get their sport pilot license in an LSA, right, and they'll cover the complete cost. And the way that happens is through grants and donations from people like you and me.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Able Flight, this is something that I do. I donate regularly. Every month I donate $15 to,
oh, do
to,
you?
To Able Flight.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's nice. I do a little bit. I do a little bit, but it's not like on a monthly. I just do them in little blips here and there.
Yeah, right. You know, I did it because I was so impressed that, you know, that he's got an incredible scholarship fund, going to, you know, to expose aviation and open up aviation to another segment of the community, and, which is outstanding, and, you know, but, you know, I think that the key here is that if everyone, you know, just made a small donation of $5 or so, you know, if 150 listeners donated $5 a month over a year, they'd be able to fund a full aviation scholarship.
And that's nothing. Just think about that. If for $5 a month, which is $60 a year.
Right.
Which is nothing. How much do we spend that on getting to the airport? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So by making that commitment, and there's plenty of pilots, so 150 of those, it gets someone their license, their sport pilot license. And this isn't just, you know, disabled, like people born that way or whatever, but it could be someone that's a wounded veteran,
right,
for instance, and that they, you know, maybe life hasn't worked out, but the joy and love we have and know of aviation should be available to all.
Right.
Right. And this is how you can make it available. So, you know, again, it's Able Flight. ableflight.org, and there's you go out to that site and there's a button for donating,
right,
and it's real simple. And you know, I try to give to a few different charities, but aviation of course is near and dear to my heart, and to me, I like to help in any area I can, and there's nothing more worthy than, again, helping people that don't have all the blessings that we have to help them understand and know the joy of flight.
Right, so absolutely.
I encourage you to all do that. Charles and Able Flight have been a friend of this program, and we hope that we're considered a friend of theirs, and would like to see our audience participate.
Yeah, absolutely. So check out ableflight.org. You'll see the donate tab at the top of the page, and it's easy, fast, and safe. You'll definitely be making a difference.
Yeah, and feeling good about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Angel Flight.
Exactly. So,
which?
Oh yeah.
How about that for a segue?
I was like,
I'm giving Al
like
the visual.
The
yeah, he's looking like, what the hell are you pointing at, Mark? I'm saying, and that's a segue.
Yes, exactly. Kind of like Angel Flight. But, yeah, you're in charge of this guest, and I'm really excited to for this show.
So next week, which we will pre-record because it's a holiday weekend, and Al and I will be doing holiday weekend type stuff, but we are still going to have our show, and excited to have Don Sumple, who is the executive director of Angel Flight Central. Angel Flight is made up of different groups across the country, and it's kind of synonymous. When people talk about charitable flights, they call them Angel Flights. Right?
Yeah,
even though it may not be specifically Angel Flight. Angel Flight is an organization I've done very little for, but I've done some for. I'd like to do more, where you actually act as a pilot and donate your time and gas and fuel to help someone. I mentioned it maybe a month ago that I was helping a cancer patient travel. And it's just a wonderful organization, again, helping us as pilots give meaning to what we do, because we're already going for the $100 hamburger. We just mentioned it.
Right. Exactly.
And we're doing it just to do it. But if you're going to spend that money, why not help somebody?
Right. Absolutely.
Right? So Angel Flight's all about that. We'll get more into it next week, but I'm very excited. I talked to Don. Matter of fact, next week I'm flying to Kansas City to see my other son, not the Cedar Rapids son, and that's where Angel Flight Central is based, in Kansas City Downtown Airport. So
are they really?
Yeah. So when I go there, you know, I actually my last job, I would fly in there, or even if I flew the airlines in, they would let me use their offices.
Really?
So I could have like an office away from my home where I could get internet, a telephone,
no
spread
kidding.
My stuff out. Yeah, wonderful people.
That's very outstanding.
Nice. Yeah.
I didn't know that they were at the downtown airport.
Yeah, over on that the South Street or whatever, the frontage road there.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I'm going to have to stop by next week.
Yeah, yeah. Say hi to Don and team.
Yeah, excellent.
Great people. So that will be next week at 8 o'clock. And then, are we going to get your chili one the following week?
No, the following week is exciting. It's the Ground Effect Advisors, you and I, and Mr. Todd McClamrick and Lewis Bowers are going to be on the show announcing the proud recipients of the StartAFlyingClub.com scholarship.
Yes.
And you and I and the rest of the team are working hard trying to pick a scholarship. And, man, it's getting hard.
Yes, well, it was, if anyone saw the press release, although it hasn't quite got the play because it just hit.
Right.
But we received 126 applications for our Flying Club scholarship. We expected, I don't know, we said 40 or what. I would have been probably pretty happy with 20, 30 because I didn't know the word out. To get 126.
Yeah.
And we just announced 10 finalists and it was super, super tough to go from 126 to 10.
Right.
But going from 10 to 1, because now we got the creme de la creme, if you will. or maybe it's just creme de la creme. But yeah, now we've got to take it down to 1, and we want it to be the right one. And the 10 finalists and more were all so deserving and are so deserving. So we're working very hard over the next couple of weeks. And then 2 weeks from last Friday, we'll be making the announcement.
Yeah, exactly. Which will be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to announcing, you know, being part of the announcement. It's gonna be pretty cool, and then the hard work, you know, begins after that.
Oh yeah, making them successful.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the thing, you know. There's so many people that have the passion and commitment to make this happen that I'm less worried about that.
Right.
Right, because we know we've got people that share that same thing that. In our flying club that got us going and
right.
over the hump. It's the people that make it happen.
Exactly. So that's going to be nice. The following week after that, we have, your favorite aviation software founder.
Must be ForeFlight.
Yes, sir. Tyson Weiss of, the founder and CEO of ForeFlight is going to be on. That's going to be June 9th. And then,
I just bought, and it's back ordered, but I just bought Stratus.
Yes.
Stratus 2. So
I'm excited.
Yeah, so am I. Like today, you know, I'm flying and I talked about these pop-up thunderstorms and all. And I was, yeah, I have an MFD, which is XM and all that, but I was using my iPad and I kept going to get tasks and different things like that on flying. And of course I can't get those on the iPad, but with the Stratus, I'll be able to.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see that and use it. You know, it's kind of like it's the forefront of a new technology in aviation. I think is going to be one of those like, you know, it's like the GPS. You know, the GPS is when it first came out, it was like, whoa, you know,
whoa.
But or you know, so I don't know. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm rather excited. Like you know, you remember Lorans?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, so Lorans were cool. And then, you know, so I think like XM is going to be the Loran of ADS-B.
Well, and Loran, but the big thing was RNAV.
Yes. Oh, the old RNAV units.
The old ones, because it was this concept, you know, all we had was VORs. And I said, wait a minute, you mean we can actually, we didn't use the term virtually. We didn't know what that meant back then. But in the 70s, you could take a VOR and pretend like to move it, so now it's all in a straight line. That's how people thought of RNAV. We can move the VORs so we don't have to go left, right. We just line them up, and that's how you flying your VOR needle.
Yeah.
And and that was the coolest thing, and none of us had it. We just heard about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool. I've only used an old RNAV unit once. And that was in a simulator.
I'm trying to think. So you must have put in a lat longs in? Is that how you
did
it?
No, you put in a radial.
Oh, a radial in a distance. Yes, yes, yes,
and
yes.
And then it shifted the, you know, like you said, move the VOR and you followed from there.
Oh my God. We have come so far. That is so cool.
Exactly. Well,
we've got to find a time. Not only get your Chilean flight in.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have other people. We just heard a pilot who talked about his 3 weeks in Alaska flying 8,000 miles or whatever it was.
Right.
And that was just such an interesting story. And I want to make sure we share that with our guests or our listening audience, who indeed are our guests in our little home here.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we're guests in their home.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's late. But no, I want to fit that in, and it sounds like it's way out. We got some great guests coming though, so it's all's good.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, maybe we could plan on the Chile trip, after Tyson's debut.
Okay. Let's do that. It still seems, I don't know if I can wait that long.
Yeah, well, I don't know if
maybe
I
we could do a midweek show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, hey, it's not just Sunday the night. We have time. You know, maybe it's time we start growing.
Yeah,
pretty soon it'll be nightly. Show. Monday through Friday, Al and Mark.
We could have like aviation soap opera hour.
Yeah, or not.
Or not.
I was hoping to win the $600 million lottery. That didn't happen, so.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't that have been cool? That I was going to buy cool. So many people airplanes, including myself.
Yeah, wow. What would you have bought?
Well, you know, it was funny. I started talking about I'd get a PC-12 because I think of my little Midwestern flights, and that may even be overkill, and a TBM-850.
Yeah.
And a guy was talking. He said, what? Get a Citation 10. And I thought, well, yeah, but then I got to have a second pilot. I'm not only going to go 100 miles for it, but he says, but you'll go further. Now you'll go to California.
Yeah.
So I decided I would need two.
Oh.
The coastal trips, the Citation 10 would be good.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, I did look up on YouTube and started looking at some 40 million dollar G5s and G550s with the, oh my God, the interiors were so awesome. And then the shorter ones, maybe even an Eclipse for my little Iowa City trip and maybe a Pilatus or something for my Kansas City trips. And,
yeah.
You know?
You know, I think you could.
It's so much fun to dream.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there was my coworker, he was out there, he's like, well, you know, the whole flight back, he's like, now that I got the winning ticket, he's like, when we land, I better call the TBM sales guy and just, you know, have him take me out to a steak dinner and tell him to bring the paperwork and all that.
He's like, fun.
What do you want? I'm like, well, you know, you might as well tell him to bring two sets of paperwork.
So you'd like a TBM too?
I think so. You know, we had a big debate. Would you get a King Air, the 250, or a TBM? And you know what? I think that you can't just like go out and, I don't know, there's a whole principle thing behind it, right? I know it's like you've got like, you know, you're set for a couple generations financially
right at
that point, but, you know, show a little,
restraint?
Restraint, exactly.
I know, but the propeller thing, you know, to me, you want to have something besides propeller.
300 knots is nice.
That one
was awesome. I gotta say.
Oh, here he comes again. Here he comes. Listen.
Yeah, now that one was not awesome.
No, I, you know, something about a gen, like even a little Eclipse jet.
I think a little Eclipse
would be fun. Little twin engine jet, 40,000 feet or something.
Yeah.
Whatever.
No, I think that would be really cool.
And then I remind myself, Mark, you didn't win, but I can still dream.
Yeah. Well, it's the next one you could win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were going to have another in-studio guest that just didn't show up. What's with that?
Yeah, that's empty. And, I don't know. He was sending a couple text messages throughout the show. He had some good ideas for another kind of like show, you know, but not necessarily featuring the America's best airport restaurants. But I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
I can only imagine.
Yeah,
but this thing about doing Spark Reel and not casting me for the show.
Yeah.
But actually, I think that would be cool because then it could help Andrea out. And you know, I thought tonight got me excited. She has a way with words and painting a vision, as I indicated. And I think, you know, it'd be cool to start adding a little bit more to our flying. And as we do these flyouts, let's take some video, not only of the camaraderie, but of the food that we're eating and the layout, and give people a sense of these places, and we can post it on her, you know, what is it, Airfare America Facebook page.
Yeah, exactly. We could be the taste testers of her.
Yeah,
of her show.
Yeah.
You like that?
I like that.
Yes, test pilots.
You got
some. How about that?
I'm on a roll here.
And,
oh, man.
Let the roll begin at the end of the show. Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. Keeps people coming back next week.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, it's that time again. And as you said,
I hate when you say that.
We're guests in people's home, and we don't want to overextend our welcome.
Better not enough than too much.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, like we said, we have some exciting shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. And I don't know. I'm excited about next week's show, even though it's going to be pre-recorded. You know, I think the Angel Flight is a really great cause.
Well, and one thing too, not unlike Andrea, I mean, we talk about amazing people doing amazing things in aviation, and as 90% of our guests, and I make that number up, are pilots.
Right.
Andrea was not a pilot.
Right.
Right? And yet she's contributing to aviation, amazing person doing amazing things in aviation. Don, our next week guest, Angel Flight, you think pilot, he's not a pilot.
Right.
But he, you know, his background, actually I think his PR was like hers. And, again, amazing person doing amazing things in aviation.
Right.
You don't have to be a pilot to make an impact.
No, so. You don't. And I like how all these people are.
Wait, maybe it was with the radio station. Now I'm trying to remember. I blanked out on Don's background. It was something with the radio station. I'm going to get that right. Keep talking.
Well, and, you know, one thing that I really like about all this is that, you know, everybody's saying, hey, we got to make aviation great. We got to make it great. And a lot of people think like, okay, well, we got to stop, you know, we got to train better. We got to be better pilots and things like that. That's how we make it great. But, you know, I hear these people, you know, tackling all these sub-segments of aviation that, you know, that are so obvious. And, I don't know, I think that's very admirable, just taking airport restaurants and really finding, that's like a little hole in the wall, you know, or like a hole in these fences going up at these airports rather than, you know, closing them off and shutting them off, they're opening them up and, you know, allowing people to see the true benefit of aviation.
Yeah, no, very well said. By the way, I'm still like feeling bad because all of a sudden I blanked out on Don's,
I think it was a Raiders, but we don't have to worry about that.
I know, but I want to do it. I think he was a program manager or program director at a radio station.
Yeah.
I apologize, Don. I will get it right for next week. You'll tell it right. This is embarrassing. Let's move on.
Yeah, we've overextended our welcome.
Exactly. Anyway, so thank you for being here tonight and helping with the show as normal.
You're welcome.
Something like that. That was not even a nice dismount, but I, you know, nice dismount.
Yeah, it was like Kerry Strug in the 96 Olympics. But that was a nice dismount, so I don't know. Who knows, but, we better go around and, wave off and land this thing before
we really run out of fuel and crash and burn.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's been a great night. It's been a quick night. The time seems to have flown by. And, I can't wait to start, diving into these little airport restaurants.
Yep, I'm with you 100%.
Excellent.
So until next week, blue skies.
And very strong tailwinds.
Good night.
Have a great night, everyone.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.